This is Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life, the trials, the tribulations, and the triumphs. Discussions about how faith matters to you and our community. Only on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts. Support for Faith Matters is brought to you by Covenant Health, where faith meets the future of medicine. Now, here are your hosts, Ryan Price and David Cruz.
Welcome to Faith Matters. I'm Ryan Price along with David Cruz, and we are sitting here today in the studio with David Langston, former mayor of the city of Lubbock from 1992 to 1996, and also a local attorney and a longtime civic leader here in our community. Welcome to you, David. Glad to have you.
It's a pleasure to be with both of you today.
Welcome. I have to confess, Ryan, I have a bias when it comes to David Langston. That is, I have a lot of respect and admiration for him, as do I think a lot of the people in this city, not only because of what he did as mayor, but what he does now in his practice as a lawyer, as an advocate for justice, and just as a community leader. So I'm delighted to have him with us. One of the things I thought we would discuss today is a little bit of a follow-up we had to a previous program with Dr. Clark Cochran, and we talked about the government shutdown and its implications on so many lives. We talked about dysfunctional government. We talked about the polarization that we have now in these political parties and the times we live in. So I think someone as astute as David Langston will really help us understand some of these issues. I think our listeners will enjoy this program. But here's a place to begin. This week we've heard a lot about Obamacare and its rollout. And so this all started, of course, when the law was passed by Congress. Granted, it was an almost Democratic majority. There was no or very little Republican support for the law. And then the administration, that the law would go into effect in 2014. But this past week, with this whole issue of the website and people trying to log on to get coverage or health insurance, we've heard a lot about it and the terrible time they've had. What are your thoughts on that, David?
Well, I'll tell you, oftentimes, you will have government projects that go awry. And I can only imagine the details that must be put together for what is the most complicated area of our economy, and that's the providing of health care to our citizens. There are so many different federal agencies that are involved in it. There are so many different aspects to health care. That's what makes the whole issue so complicated. Then you lay that over with trying to put it on a website, where they have to have so many different connections to different federal agencies. And in many instances, the private companies have to be brought in because they'll be the one that they'll actually be buying some of the insurance. That being the case, it's not a surprise to me that there were some glitches, that there was a major issue, because if you've ever gone to any website, when it first comes out, there's lots of problems associated with it. So I think that the thing that I would want to emphasize is the ultimate goal of the project is to make health care available to everyone and to take the burden off of emergency care that our hospitals and doctors are having to sustain.
Well put. I couldn't agree more. So the response that we hear sometimes is, well, it's all bad. Let's scrap it. To heck, it was a bad idea in the first place, according to some. Therefore, we should just get rid of it. And that's what brings me back to the government shutdown. It all started with a senator from Texas, Ted Cruz, basically persuading enough Republicans in the House to fund Obamacare when it came time for this debt ceiling business and to continue funding government in general, that was the condition for them to pass new legislation, was we have to defund this plan. Is that a correct way of putting it?
Well, it held the American economy hostage. That's basically what it did. It tried to turn democracy on its head by saying, we'll hold a gun to your head, economy. We'll hold a gun to your head unless you defund this program that we don't like. That has never been the concept of how Congress should operate. That has not been the concept for more than 200 years of the history of our country. That's not the way it's done, and that's not the way it should be done. And that's what the fight was all about.
David, I would add for our listeners' sake the fact that you formerly were a legislative assistant for Congressman Mahon, who was in Congress for, I think, 22 consecutive terms, nearly the entire 20th century. But you saw Congress at work in the late 1970s, really up close and personal. And then we're looking at what happened over the last couple or 3 weeks in 2013. When you use this word democracy, should we be concerned about what we're seeing with respect to the way that we're governing ourselves or being governed? And what kinds of differences have you seen if you compare and contrast the 1970s and the tenure of Congressman Mahon to what we have now?
Well, I think it can be summed up in one word. The word is money. Money has poisoned the system. And anyone that doesn't believe that, all you've got to do is look at the 60 Minutes program that was held this last Sunday, where they talked about that Congress created their own ability for each representative and each senator to have their own special slush fund from which they could take people to football games, where they could take people on exotic golfing trips, where they could pay their relatives out of this slush fund. That goes on, by the way, much more than common people would know today. You then take that over the fact that now corporations are providing the greatest amount of campaign funds. That did not go on in the 1970s. There were some big money that was involved, but I can tell you, I happened to be the campaign manager for the last congressional campaign of George Mahon in 1976. And if my memory serves me correct, that whole campaign was something around $200,000, $250,000 that we ran. And today, you know, you're looking at campaigns that cost anywhere from $1.5 million to $2 million. Those are expensive campaigns, and when you're playing with that much money, whoever gives you that money, you can't help but have a closer ear to what they have to say. To me, money should not poison the system.
Democracy for sale?
I would think that would be a kind way of putting it.
One thing, as we discuss all these issues, that comes to mind, why do you think, and perhaps we're going to go to a break here in just a bit, so let me just kind of set the table here. Why do you think there's so much now apprehension or resistance to compromise, that we seem to send people to Congress, at least in our country, that represent extremes, okay? So there's this polarity, and then when they get there, they resist any kind of compromise with the other party when it comes to governance. But heck, I'm talking about the average citizen on the street. That's all we do every day is compromise. And we'll talk more about that perhaps, Ryan, if you want to take us to a break.
You're listening to Faith Matters Today with David Langston on 89.1 Lubbock's Voice of the Arts.
You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.1 Lubbock's Voice of the Arts with your hosts, Ryan Price and David Cruz. Brought to you by Covenant Health, where faith meets the future of medicine.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm Ryan Price along with David Cruz, and we are sitting here today in the studio with David Langston, former mayor of Lubbock from 1992 to 1996, a local attorney and a longtime civic leader. And David, before the break, you were speaking as someone who has already been and run through the gauntlet of politics and has come out on the other side freer to speak a little bit. And I'm reminded of one of the things that a former President Carter said once, which was, there's a cartoon that said, when I grow up, I want to be an ex-president. There is some kind of freedom there.
Oh, yes.
In having served your term. Before the break, David Cruz was talking about compromise and what has sometimes been called the art of compromise. But now, in many ways, compromise has become a bad word, something that one would not wish to have to seek in an elected official. Talk to us a little bit about where you see the landscape when it comes to how we function together in a democracy.
Well, I think that this polarity that we have right now is really a symptom of a larger problem. And that larger problem is, you know, now we have the attitude that winning by any means is the only thing. We have to win, whether it's a baseball game or a soccer game or in business or in politics. You have to win. Therefore, there can be no compromise. You don't want to be a loser. Well, I have to tell you that through our daily lives, you know, there are ways that you can make it a win-win situation. You don't get everything that you want. The other person doesn't get everything they want. In a marriage, at your church, in your business, whether it's a law firm or a corporation that sells widgets, there's compromise that has to be done. But no, we have to win. You know, there used to be that saying, you know, it's not whether you win or lose, but how you play the game. If you say that today in a Little League sports locker room or something like that, people will laugh at you. Winning is everything. Well, I don't believe that's the case. I believe sometimes it's how you win, and sometimes it's how you treat other people. And if you can negotiate a situation where it's win-win, then that's the best solution. So now we have this attitude in politics. Well, I'm not going to give one iota. That, to me, is the problem.
Hence the impasse.
Hence the impasse, and there's another aspect of it, too, and it's a practical aspect of it. Now you have state legislatures that their business is to make sure that they create safe seats for themselves and for other office holders in their same party. So we gerrymander it where we don't ever have a choice. How long has it been in this congressional district since we've really had a choice between two viable candidates? I would say it's been probably more than 10 years. You know, there was Nagebauer and Conaway in a runoff. They were both viable candidates. Before that,
Stenholm was a viable candidate, but at the same time,
he was a victim of gerrymandering. I mean, Tom DeLay made it very well known to his colleagues that to him, the comment was made, Stenholm is history. You know, it didn't make any difference whether Charlie Stenholm had done a good job representing the farmers out here and he was in line to be the chairman of the Agriculture Committee. No, it was what party he was from. So we change his district so he has to run head-to-head in what is a very, very red district.
Step back from the local to the more global, but beginning maybe with our own state. Given the fact that we all know that there are going to be some sweeping demographic changes in the state over the next 10 to 20 years, what do you see is going to happen? Now, I think this will play out to some degree in the next gubernatorial election or statewide when it's time for us to elect statewide offices. What do you see?
Well, of course, the demographics that you're talking about is that Hispanics, Latinos, will soon be the majority in our state. To me, that means that as a state government, as local government, we need to make sure that the majority, which will be the Latinos, have the education that they need, the experience that they need, the background in a variety of different areas to be the leaders of the future. That means we make sure that our education system is number one in the nation. You know, now we're competing with the state of Mississippi for last. It used not to be that way in the state of Texas. We have to develop a 21st century education system. There will be a time when those demographics will cause Latinos to be the majority of elected positions, in my view. Now, whether they're blue or red, I don't think it makes much difference insofar as the fact that they're going to be Latinos that will be, provided they go to the polls, governing our state. So that's what I see. And I think that as a state that is going to be impacted by those demographics, we should start taking steps right now to get ready for it.
I know that education is something you're passionate about, David, and you referenced that just a moment ago. What kind of steps do we need to be taking with respect to education to prepare for that coming future, which really is upon us?
Well, several years ago, I had the opportunity to lead an effort called Success by Six, which basically is early childhood development. All of the scientific and educational studies that are taking place now. There was an article this week about the fact that, you know, there's a great difference between the educational level of a two-year-old who lives in a moderate to high-income family to those that are in poverty. That they're just, their educational levels are different. Success by Six was designed to reach the children at the earliest possible age, between 0 and 3. That's when the greatest amount of accumulated knowledge takes place. Language skills, social skills, etc. What we wanted to do is take a designated geographic area and have mentors, neighborhood mentors in that area that would identify the young women that were getting pregnant and make sure that one thing happened. And that was that in the first trimester, they have a prenatal screening. That's the very most important thing that can happen in those first 3 months. Then what happens is that we will take that opportunity when we do the prenatal screening to put them into two areas. First, so that the mother can continue to get good health care, so that baby will be healthy when it's born. And second, that we can start providing the educational tools that the mother needs to teach that child and to bond with that child after it's born.
Further steps after that as
Absolutely.
Well?
Absolutely, and I'll be glad to talk with you further about that. What happens after we get into those two areas, we gauge the success of the program by whether or not in that particular geographic area we were reducing the prenatal low birth weight babies. The preemies and the low birth weight babies. And from there, then, we could tell whether we were successful.
Fascinating. When we come back, I've got a question for each of y'all regarding something that you were both on, which was the Envisioning Lubbock Committee or Task Force. I have a question about that for each of you and where we stand on that when we return to Faith Matters on 89.1 Lubbock's Voice of the Arts.
This is Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts, hosted by Ryan Price and David Cruz, and brought to you by Covenant Health, where faith meets the future of medicine.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm Ryan Price, along with David Cruz, and today we're sitting in the studio with David Langston, former mayor of Lubbock, a local attorney and also a longtime civic leader. And before the break, David, you were wrapping up some conversation that we were having about a program that you were involved with formerly, called Success by Six, and just underscoring the importance of connecting with kids at an early age. And tell us a little bit more about that program.
Well, as I was saying at the conclusion before the break, you know, our success was tied to whether or not we successfully were reducing the amount of low birth weight babies. That told us whether or not we were reaching enough and making sure that they had the health care that they need to try to avoid those early term births. But not only that, but once we got them in the system, and if you can reach a child and prepare him to enter the public school system, then they can be successful. You follow that up with another program that I was involved in called Communities in Schools, that is where the local community, through the PTA and the parents and those that attend that school, in cooperation with the administrators, try to keep the kids in school. Try to make sure that they, if they fall behind in math, that there's someone that can come and tutor them. Or if they need to learn to read, that there's someone to do that. That then makes it possible for those people to graduate from high school and either, if they want to, go on into college or go into perhaps some other type of workforce training so that they can get the jobs that they need and that will be available in the 21st century.
Ryan, I think a lot of our listeners and certainly a lot of people in our community know David Langston, kind of from a public perspective, because he has been involved in the public life of this community as a leader, and as you said, as now someone who has a practice, a law practice, and then as a public official. But I'm intrigued by someone like David, who's accomplished so much. What has been kind of some spiritual driving motivations, and what has inspired, in this case, David Langston? And let me merge this with a thought I was having. I'm working right now on some conferences I'm going to be doing next month on stewardship. Very often we are guilty of reducing stewardship to the component of giving, which is good, but it's so much more than that. Stewardship of time, stewardship of our gifts, God-given gifts and abilities. Stewardship is also treasure in how we use resources. What is stewardship to you?
Stewardship to me is the concept of neighbors working together, like within a congregation, like within a neighborhood. People working together to solve problems, whether that problem happens to be someone that needs help feeding their children, needs help with a particular emotional problem or mental problem that they have, someone that is trying to deal with grief from loss. The people come together and they minister to that individual. It's all based on the concept that, you know, yes, we are our brother's keeper. Jesus admonished us, you know, did you do it to the least of these? When I was sick, did you come visit me? When I was in jail, did you come visit me? That, to me, is true stewardship, giving of your time and of your emotions and of your talents to try to resolve problems that all are part of being a human being.
Who's done that for you?
Oh, gosh, there are so many people. You know, Ryan mentioned George Mahon. You know, he gave me an opportunity when I was a young, inexperienced, green 18-year-old kid. I started out being the chauffeur for him in Washington, D.C., and addressing envelopes for him in the office to send out baby books and cookbooks to people. So, I mean, that to me is someone that has helped me. My family, my brother Don, you know, he took me under his wing when I was a young kid. I worked out on the farm. I didn't always enjoy what I was doing at the end of that hoeing cotton, but I learned a lot doing it.
Fascinating.
So those are the type of
That's
thing.
Great. That's marvelous.
I'm reminded that Dr. King, before he was Dr. King, was just the son of a preacher, and he went up to Connecticut and chopped cotton for a summer. And he came back and said that the Lord had called him to be a preacher. And everyone joked, whether it's at the cotton field or God who called him to be a preacher. You mentioned a word, together, and it sort of ties in to committee that you were both on, Imagine Lubbock Together. Talk to our listeners just a little bit about that committee, its work, and its conclusions, and where it goes next, and how we can be a part of that.
Well, Father Cruz and I did have the pleasure of serving on Imagine Lubbock Together. It was a group of citizens, from people that were involved in the medical industry to people who were involved in corporations, banks, people that worked, you know, in a variety of different jobs in this community, that were put together with the task of, let's look at what are the things that Lubbock can do over the next 5, 10, 20 years. What can we do? And what are the areas that we need to work on? We came up with 8 different categories of things that the people of Lubbock told us that they wanted. We emphasized, we want input from you. We held public meetings. And from that, we developed 8 different categories of things. One having to do with, for example, infrastructure, water, energy, sewer systems, streets, transportation, things of that nature. Then such things as education and strengthening neighborhoods and creating arts and entertainment opportunities, those type of things. So that's what we did, and we came up with some goals, and now we're in the implementation phase where we're trying to be the catalyst to see that those things happen.
The funding is always an issue, is it not, David, where the resources come from? And I, of course, please correct me if I'm wrong, there seems to be right now so much resistance to anything that's publicly financed or funded, at least in our neck of the woods.
Well, there's this general attitude in certain quarters, and I don't think that it's necessarily the majority of people, that government is somehow bad. They forget about all of the things that government has brought to this area. You know, we wouldn't have had electricity or telephones if it wasn't for the federal government allowing us the opportunity to have electric cooperatives that brought lights to rural America, to have telephones because of the fact that we wanted to have the type of things that people in urban areas had. It wasn't economically viable for the big corporations to do it, and they weren't going to do it. But because of that cooperative effort, through government, we brought that to our area of the world.
Yeah, it's funny because being a Lubbockite myself, I remember the outcry, the outrage, when Reese Air Force Base was shut down. You remember?
Oh, absolutely. I was mayor.
But that
it was your fault.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, by the way, that was under a Republican administration, presidency rather. But the point is that's government too, but we're not maybe as wise about looking at things and discriminating. What are some of the good parts of government? It can't all be bad.
David, if we're looking for future leaders, people to step up and wear that mantle, what kind of characteristics do those people need to have for us in the future?
I think they need to be people that are well-educated and have a background of experience in business, in government, and a variety of things. I think they need to have a history of some sort of community service that they have given back to the community and have proven their leadership abilities. I don't believe that you immediately step from being a private citizen to, for example, representing us in the state legislature if you haven't had a background of
civic service
and of participating in local issues. That gives you a basis as a voter to determine whether that or not that person is qualified.
David, so good to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Faith Matters Today on 89.1 Lubbock's Voice of the Arts.